Welcome to Torah Imecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Leah Feinberg, and today we will be learning Sefer Shmuel Aleph, Perek Tet, Chapter 9. At the end of last Perek, Shmuel had agreed in principle with the people's request for a king, but in practice had sent them home to wait until the right candidate would be designated by Hashem. We studied Shmuel's description of the royal power that would be wielded over the people by the king, and we discussed whether this was a list of powers that the king might legitimately enforce, or whether this would constitute an abuse of those powers. In Hilchot Melachim, the Laws of Kings, the Rambam Maimonides lists these as legitimate powers within the rights of the king, along with some additional rights, but concludes by saying, Uvechol elu hadvarim dino din, uvechol yihyu ma'asav l'shem shamayim. V'tihiyeh megamato u'machshavto leharim dat emet u'limal'ot ha'olam tzedek. In all of these things, the law of the king is the law. And in all that he does, his deeds must be for the sake of heaven, and his entire purpose and intent must be to elevate the true faith and fill the world with justice. In other words, these powers are legitimate, but only insofar as they serve a higher purpose, which is to glorify Hashem and to bring the nation, and indeed the entire world, closer to Hashem through their awe and reverence for the righteous king who serves as his emissary. The character of the king is going to be supremely important in determining whether he will be able to implement these principles with good judgment, with the Torah as his guiding light, and with the spiritual and material welfare of the people in mind. So this is going to be very important for us to keep in mind as we are now about to meet the man who will serve as the nation's first king. Pasuk Aleph, Vayhi ish mi Binyamin, ushmo Kish ben Aviel ben Sror ben Bechorat ben Afiach ben ish Yemini, gibor chayil. There was a man of Binyamin, and his name was Kish, son of Aviel, son of Tzror, son of Bechorat, son of Afiach, son of a distinguished man of Binyamin, a mighty man of valor. Da'at Sofrim notes that while mi Binyamin is read as one word, it is written as two separate words, ben Yamin, Yamin meaning the right hand. He explains that the text here is acknowledging the honor of the tribe of Binyamin, who for several hundred years had suffered disgrace and the consequences of moral degradation, as we learned at the end of Sefer Shoftim, but have now successfully overcome that challenge and have become the right hand of the nation. From this broad statement regarding the tribe, the verse narrows to list the antecedents of Shaul's father, Kish. It's a general rule that when numerous generations are listed, it's an indication that they were all righteous. Pasuk Bet, verse 2, Velo haya ben ushmo Shaul, bachur vatov, ve'ein ish mibnei Yisrael tov mimenu, mishichmo v'mala gavoa mikol ha'am. Kish had a son whose name was Shaul, who was exceptional. No one in Israel was finer than he. He was head and shoulders above the rest. Malbim explains these verses as descriptive of the qualities of Shaul that render him fit to be king. First, in Pasuk Aleph, verse 1, his lineage, which asserts that in the merit of his forefathers, he would stand in good stead, and the fact that his father is described as a gibor chayil, a mighty man of valor, leads us to presume that Shaul would have inherited that quality, and that's why it bore mention now in this pasuk. Shaul himself is introduced as Bachur Vatov. Malbim translates Bachur as a youth, a young man, and the pairing with Vatov tells us that even though he's young, he was good in the eyes of God and man, not driven by his desires like most youths, but one who sat among the elders and stood out even among them for his sterling character. Moreover, he was physically imposing. He commanded respect. Da'at Sofrim questions the interpretation of Bachur as a youth. Mathematically, he calculates that Shaul must be at least in his 50s at this time, as he was only king for a very short time, and his son was 40 years old when he became king upon his father's death, upon Shaul's death. So he therefore prefers the translation of Bachur as one who was chosen, designated by all as exceptionally good, outstanding in Torah and in good deeds. So how can we reconcile ourselves to Malbim's explanation? Certainly the Malbim could do basic math. So we'll see in the story that is about to follow, there's a certain innocence in Shaul, an endearing sort of naivete that allows us to think that Shaul, even in what we would consider middle age, still retained a very youthful quality. And perhaps that is what Malbim is alluding to. What follows is a charming little story in a pastoral setting. Once some donkeys belonging to Kish, the father of Shaul, went missing. And Kish said to Shaul, "Take one of the Ne'arim, one of the attendants with you, and get up and go search for the donkeys." Shaul did this. He passed through Har Ephraim and the land of Shalisha, but did not find them. They passed through the land of Sha'alim, but they were not there. He passed through the land of Binyamin, but did not find them. They came to the land of Tzuf, and Shaul said to the attendant who was with him, "Let us return, lest my father stop thinking about the donkeys and worry about us." The attendant said to him, "Behold now, there is a man of God in this city, an Ish Elokim, and the man is highly esteemed. Everything that he says comes to pass. Let us go there now. Perhaps he will advise us concerning our journey." The phrase at the end of verse 6, Pasuk Vav, "Ulai yagid lanu et haderech asher halachnu," is written in a sort of confusing combination of future and past tense. "Ulai yagid lanu," perhaps he will tell us, "haderech asher halachnu," the path that we have already traveled. Most of the commentators interpret this contextually to mean he will give us guidance as to the journey that we have undertaken and how to help us and help us find the lost donkeys. The Alshich suggests that the attendant was actually taking note of the fact that it's unusual for donkeys to have traveled so far. And he was hinting that perhaps there's a deeper purpose for which they had to take this road, which the prophet might reveal to them. Shaul had no objection in principle to the idea of seeking the prophet's guidance, but he did have a practical concern. "Let's go, but what can we bring to the man? For our bread has been consumed, and we have nothing to offer to the man of God. For what do we have with us?" The attendant responded, "Here, I have reva shekel kesef, a quarter of a silver shekel. I will give it to the man of God, and he will tell us about our way." So we have here this, again, charming little interlude. But it does, we do see a little bit about Shaul. He is very malleable. He allows himself to be guided by the Na'ar. The Na'ar is the one with all the knowledge of the world. He knows they've arrived at a city where there's an Ish Elokim, and he knows a little bit about this Ish Elokim. And perhaps even most significantly, he's the one with the money in his pocket, where Shaul is very, okay, sure, that sounds like a good idea. One midah of sensitivity that we do see in Shaul is when Shaul expresses his concern that his father will have stopped worrying about the donkeys and be worrying about himself, about his son and the Na'ar. He equates the Na'ar to himself. He says, "Let us return, lest my father stop thinking about the donkeys and worry about us," as if his father is equally concerned for the Na'ar as he is for his own son. At this point, the narrator interjects with an apparently random fact. In Pasuk Tet, verse 9, "Lefanim b'Yisrael, ko amar ha'ish b'lechto lidrosh Elokim, l'chu v'nelcha ad haro'eh, ki lanavi hayom yikarei lifnim haro'eh." In earlier times in Israel, when someone went to seek Hashem, they would say, "Let us go to the seer, the ro'eh, for those whom today are called prophets, nevi'im, were formerly called seers." Malbim explains that the difference is that in the earlier times, the Ro'eh, the seer, had constant access to divine channels, and therefore they were able to resolve seemingly minor personal issues, while the later prophets received prophecies that were addressed to the entire nation, loftier messages, which explains why this fact would be relevant here. It was not uncommon for people to seek guidance in personal matters at that time from a prophet that, when we think of the Nevi'im, like the later Nevi'im, that would seem sort of very trivial to bring to their attention. Sort of, how can you help me find my lost donkeys? Shaul agreed with the attendant to go to the city in which the man of God was to be found. And as they ascended the approach to the city, they passed a group of young girls going out to draw water. And they asked, "Is this where to find the seer?" Rather than offering a simple yes, the girls draw out their answer. Pasuk Yud Bet, verse 12, Vatanena otam vatomarna. Yesh, hine lefanecha, maher ata ki hayom balair, ki zevach hayom la'am babama. They answered and they said, "Yes, here, just ahead of you. Hurry, for he has just arrived in the city today, for there's a big sacrifice to be offered today at the platform. As you enter the city, you will find him even before he ascends the bama, the platform, to eat, for all the people will not eat before he comes, for he blesses the offering, and only afterward do the invited guests eat. Now go, for you will find him as surely as it is day." The Gemara in Brachot 48b cites the opinion of the Amora Shmuel that the girls deliberately drew out their answer so as to gaze at Shaul's handsome appearance. Kliyakar defends this behavior by saying that their intentions were pure. They admired him as a function of admiring God's handiwork. Another interpretation is that Hashem had revealed to Shmuel that the man he had designated to be the first king of Israel would appear before him at a precise time, and the girls were unknowingly the agents sent to assure that he arrived at that precise moment and not a second earlier. This speaks to the concept that we human beings may have our own reasons for our behaviors, but at the same time may be fulfilling some mission designed by Hashem unbeknownst even to ourselves. Shaul and his attendant continued their ascent toward the city, and as they entered, Shmuel came toward them on his way to ascend the platform. Now, as we said, Hashem had revealed to Shmuel the preceding day that at that precise time tomorrow he would send a man before him from the land of Binyamin, and he should anoint him king over Israel to save them from the hands of the Plishtim, for he had heard the cry of distress of the people. One second. The people are crying from distress over attacks from the Plishtim? But I thought we had achieved peace with the Plishtim. So the commentators explain here that with the decline of the people's faith in Shmuel, they had begun to backslide, and the Plishtim had once again begun to conduct raids against Israel. When Shmuel saw Shaul, Hashem spoke to him, whispered in his ear, as it were, "This is the man of whom I spoke to you. This one will rule over my people." Shaul approached Shmuel at the gate and said, "Can you tell me, which is the house of the seer?" Shmuel answered him, saying, "Anochi haro'eh, I am the seer." Chazal faults Shmuel here for demonstrating a subtle trace of arrogance in his answer, for which he would be punished in a future episode. Interestingly, the Chida in Chomat Anach suggests that Shmuel was actually chastised for the opposite. A Navi, a prophet, is a higher level than a ro'eh, a seer. He serves a loftier purpose. He uses more highly developed forms of expression. Therefore, Shmuel, who had achieved the higher spiritual status of Navi, was actually belittling himself by acknowledging himself as merely the ro'eh. Shmuel accorded honor to Shaul, telling him to ascend ahead of him to the platform and eat with him that day. He told him that he would send him on his way the following morning and tell him all that was in his heart, which can be understood as a hint that he would resolve all the issues that had bothered Shaul, whether in Torah learning or in general. And regarding the lost donkeys, don't worry, they've been found. To which he adds the cryptic comment at the end of verse 20, Pasuk Chaf, "Ulemi kol chemdat Yisrael, halo lecha ulechol beit avicha." The simple translation refers to property. After all, to whom does all the desirable property of Israel belong, if not to you and your father's household? So there's no need to worry about a few donkeys. On a deeper level, the commentators explain that Shmuel was hinting to the kingship, saying, "Whom does all of Israel desire, if not you?" Or, "As king, all of the desirable property of Israel belongs to you, so no need to worry about the donkeys. Shaul protested, saying, "Halo venyamini anochi, miktanei shivtei Yisrael, umishpachti hatzeira mikol mishpachot shivtei binyamin, velamedi bartai laika davar hazeh. I am only a Benjaminite, from the smallest tribe in Israel, and my family is the youngest of all the families of my tribe. Why do you speak to me this way?" Shmuel disregarded Shaul's protest and directed him to join him in his chamber, where he seated him at the head of the invited guests, some 30 distinguished men. Shmuel instructed the chef, "Bring the portion that I had you set aside." And the chef brought forward the thigh and its fat, which was considered a choice portion, and set it before Shaul. And Shmuel encouraged him to eat, for the portion had been designated for him when he had instructed the chef to prepare for his guests. And Shaul ate with Shmuel on that day. When they descended from the platform to the city, Shmuel spoke with Shaul on the rooftop. Why on the rooftop? Either to assure complete privacy, or perhaps to attest to the lofty nature of the substance of the conversation. According to Rashi, Shmuel spoke to Shaul concerning Yirat Hashem, fear of God, and offered words of rebuke, of constructive criticism, helping to build Shaul as an Eved Hashem, a servant of God. Malbim explains that Shmuel revealed to Shaul hidden secrets of the Torah and divine matters. While the matter of the kingship was not yet explicitly spoken of, Shaul must have been cognizant of the special attention he was receiving. Shmuel, at this point, is investing a great deal of energy and zeal into the education of Shaul, laying the foundation for a relationship as mentor to the future king and bonding with him emotionally, intellectually, and spiritually. In the morning, Shmuel summoned Shaul and his attendant and instructed the attendant to walk on ahead, while Shaul was to remain at his side so that Shmuel could impart to him the word of Hashem, which will be revealed to us in the next chapter. Thank you for learning together Le'ilui Nishmot Imhotenu HaYekarot, Esther Oppenheimer Aleha HaShalom, and Sarah Schenker Aleha HaShalom, each deeply devoted and proud to transmit their family's Torah legacy to the next generations.